this is Mel, and I'm watching the Cubs lose from a rooftop, but you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thanks, Mel. Enjoy the rooftop action over there outside of Wrigley Field. Good morning. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 766. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. As always, you can say hello to us online. You can dial up the old Twitter feed at Outside the Loop, the Instagram feed at Outside the Loop Radio. You can also search us on Facebook. And of course, do not forget to download the podcast of the show. If you don't do so already, it's a free subscription too. If you'd like to subscribe, that would be awesome. Anywhere you get your on-demand audio these days. Bob Ferguson is our engineer in the studio today. Colin Seaman is the producer of the show. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'll tell you this much. Speaking of baseball games, I went to my first baseball game in about 2 years. And I'm a Cubs fan, but I have a good buddy of mine who's a Sox fan. And he took me to Guaranteed Rate Field in Bridgeport. And I went to a Sox game on Wednesday.
Did you by chance take a bike, a Divvy bike, to that game?
I did not, but I took the L. But are you referring to like the pile of Divvy bikes that ended up outside of Wrigley Field?
I am. I'm wondering if such a pile might exist outside of Guaranteed Rate.
I didn't see any, Colin, but if you don't know what we're talking about, it was pretty recently, within the last few days, someone took a picture and it was all over Twitter. I guess a bunch of people were taking Divvy bikes to Wrigley Field and they left them all at the same Divvy station. I'm not exaggerating, Colin, you've seen this picture, like a mountain of Divvy bikes right outside of Wrigley.
Right. I wouldn't say they left them. I would say whoever wanted to start that mountain clearly started stacking, and then everybody else thought it was pretty funny, and all of a sudden, you've got like a equivalent of the giant pile of dead Christmas trees that you can throw, recycle at the park, going on outside of Wrigley at what should be a Divvy station. So, yeah, it was nuts.
Yeah. I guess I was just trying to, thinking people were innocent until proven guilty. But you're probably right, Colin. They were probably like, hey, let's get this pile. Let's see how big this pile can go.
I'm sorry. I'm maybe throwing I'm painting with a broad brush here, Mike. But as soon as it became a mountain, as soon as it became a thing, somebody was like, oh, I can throw this bike up that high, or I can get this bike on that mountain. I mean, did you see the giant cup snake that was at Wrigley as well?
I did. The estimated value of that was like $30,000 with the amount of money that goes into beer at Wrigley Field.
Did you have a good time at the game? Let's just go to the most important part here.
I mean, it was weird because I'm not a Sox fan. So when people around me were like, yeah, let's go Sox, I'm just like, yeah, let's go Chicago teams.
It's because you're a reasonable man, Mike, and you know that the pitcher should hit. I'm sorry. The pitcher should hit.
Oh, American League,
No, we're national. I'm sorry. I know you've had this show longer than I have, but this is a National League show. The pitcher should hit. I'm planting a flag.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that, Colin. I'm, as a Cubs fan, and you, the Giants fan, we're firmly rooted in the National League.
Yeah, I just think it's better baseball, but that's my opinion.
Well, hey, let's get controversial with that. And who knows, maybe other stuff today. Although, well, not really. We've got the secret history of Chicago music. We'll learn about a local reggae band from the 80s. Also, we'll talk about, hey, today's Juneteenth. We'll talk about the significance of Juneteenth here in Chicago. And we will check in with the Chicago Justice Project. What's going on with the Committee on Public Safety in the Chicago City Council? According to the Chicago Justice Project, not that much. So stay tuned to this National League show, although we love the American League listeners too, because,
I mean, I guess without them, you can't have a World Series, but that's about it.
Like I said, we're controversial. Today is June 19th, and this is a special day because it commemorates Juneteenth. On this date, in 1865, General Gordon Granger and federal troops arrived in Galveston, Texas, to make sure that all who were enslaved were set free. This date celebrates the end of slavery in the United States. And earlier this week, Mayor Lightfoot announced that Chicago will celebrate the day as an official city holiday starting next year. Lucretia Burtz is the co-founder and co-chair of the Black Remembrance Project. That is an organization that works to draw attention and to celebrate significant events in African American history. Lucretia is with us here on Outside the Loop today. Lucretia, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You are welcome. So at the outset here, I know you've said this before. I've said this before. I believe it's true, but it bears repeating that African American history is American history. We have to frame that, I think, at the outset, because to have a conversation about this, that's really important to understand.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that statement. And I have been putting it on posters when we were protesting to get the holiday, solidified in the city of Chicago. So I definitely believe that Juneteenth is absolutely American history. As you know, on the 4th of July in 1776, Black people were not free. So when we celebrate that holiday, it kind of creates discomfort for Black Americans because we feel like we're not really included in that celebration. I know I've always felt that. And I actually didn't know about Juneteenth until I was an adult, because I think our nation does a terrible job of teaching about slavery and about Black American history in general.
I think that there's definitely an issue with that, right? I mean, we have to understand a more complete telling of our history to really understand who we are today, where we have come from. But also, you know, you think about the United States today, and they're all different kinds of people in the United States. And if you can't see yourself in that history, if you can't see yourself in the story, then you feel like you're left out.
Yeah. And I feel like Black Americans are made to feel left out. We're made to feel like, you know, we're second class citizens and like we don't really belong here. And this isn't our land, too. But the truth of the matter is, since this, first of all, this country arguably wouldn't be what it is today if it wasn't for the labor of enslaved Black Americans. Right. And so how do we reckon with that? We really don't. As a nation, we don't do anything to acknowledge that history. It's kind of just swept under the rug. And so when myself and my members of the Black Remembrance Project launched the campaign to make Juneteenth recognized in the city of Chicago in 2019, we launched that campaign because 2019 was the 400-year anniversary of Black American descendants coming over to this land, right, on slave ships. And so we wanted to really highlight and have people reckon with that history. And we think that having a day every year that's designated and reserved for, you know, this particular aspect of our history is important. And I thought it was so important for Juneteenth to be recognized as a paid holiday because I'm not going to compare it to other holidays, but we have all these other holidays where you get a day off and, you know, it's federally recognized. But you would think that we need a day to recognize enslaved labor, right? And that it would be appropriate for that day for workers to have the day off, right? Like out of all the days. So we've been fighting very hard, and I'm just so happy that, you know, the mayor finally decided to make it a holiday.
So with all that being said, let's dive a little bit deeper into what Juneteenth means to the Black community. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Juneteenth, for me personally, as a Black American slavery descendant, is about creating space for my people, our particular culture, and our particular grievances that we have with this nation. There, again, I know that we have Black History Month, and Black History Month has kind of become like a catch-all for sort of all Black people, and there are different types of Black people, right? Like, mm-hmm. Let's be clear about that. There are folks from other countries who also fall into the bucket of, you know, Black, But Juneteenth is specifically a holiday recognizing the folks who were enslaved in this country. It's about creating space for the Black Americans from this land and recognizing our grievances and our struggles.
And so in terms of how we celebrate, you know, it's definitely personal and powerful to the Black community, but we can all celebrate Juneteenth. I mean, this is something, it's the end of slavery. We should all be celebrating the end of slavery in the United States. What would you like to see happen? A parade, some sort of party downtown?
Well, what I want to see, I mean, definitely when we launched this campaign, we wanted to do things downtown. And I think we kind of got that through the flag raising ceremony that we just had on Monday with the mayor. And I hope that happens every year because it's just, I think it just really solidifies the importance of it. It gives the holiday more legitimacy. But I really just want to see communities coming together in celebration. I want to see some of the traditions of the Black American community kind of uplifted and, you know, just people just being together in space and just enjoying each other's company. But I also, as a community organizer, I strongly believe that Juneteenth is also a day about highlighting the present grievances that are faced in this country, specifically by Black Americans.
I know that one of the conversations here is about equity. And sometimes we conflate that with equality, but they're two different terms. And this kind of speaks to an equity issue when it comes to the Black community.
Yes. First of all, I want to shout out Commissioner Deere from Cook County. He pointed this out at the flag raising ceremony on Monday. He talked about how, you know, there is a difference between equality and equity and how equality is just about giving everyone the same. Equity is about going a step further and making sure that people get basically justice for things that are past due. And I definitely think that Juneteenth as a holiday is something that is past due for Black Americans in this country. Not only have we not getting our fair share of just like recognition in terms of our contributions in this country, I think we don't get our fair share when it comes to the present slice of the economic pie as well. And what I'm hoping happens with Juneteenth is that we start to have an honest conversation about reparations in this country. Because I think that that's the only way to truly get equity. You know, there were millions of Black Americans who were enslaved and did not get any sort of compensation at all for the labor, for their pain and suffering. And some white Americans are still living off of the wealth that was built during slavery. And it feels like all of the pain and the hardships that are still being endured from that moment are still faced by the Black Americans who are descendants of slavery in this country. And I think that in order to truly have equity and to rise up so that we can all be truly at an equal level, there needs to be reparations.
So we're talking about Juneteenth here, but I mean, there are other events in history that pertain to the African American community. And I know that you have advocated that we should remember other days and other events. So we're talking about Juneteenth, but this isn't really limited to Juneteenth. There are other events in American history that pertain, like I said, to the Black community here that should be remembered and celebrated.
When we started this campaign, the Black Remembrance Project, when we started in 2019, that year was a very spectacular year in terms of history for Black American descendants of slavery. Not only was it the 400-year anniversary of us sort of coming onto the shores of Virginia as, you know, enslaved people on slave ships, but it was also the 100-year anniversary of the Chicago race riot, which I also didn't learn about in school. And it was the 50th anniversary of Fred Hampton's assassination. Now, these are two big historical events in Chicago. We thought that, you know, it was important to recognize that. And like even today, like we're still struggling with police brutality. And when you think about the Chicago race riot, just learning about, I learned about that as an adult, but it helped me to make sense of the segregation in the city, because I learned that after that event, there was more sort of regulation to kind of keep the races separate because of that race riot that broke out. It was over a span of a couple of days from July to August, and it was brutal. People died, right? And that is something that I did not know about. And I feel like creating spaces to remember these tragedies force us in the present moment to decide how we want to proceed in terms of race relations, in terms of just general dynamics between people in our society, you know? So, you know, in the absence of making space for those things, I feel like, you know, we're not really living in our truth, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's time for us to really reckon with some of these things, and not just, you know, Black American holidays, even though that is very, very important to me, but even how we look at, you know, other holidays like Christopher Columbus Day.
Well, it's Juneteenth. We should celebrate the end of slavery in the United States. I know this is incredibly important to the Black community in Chicago, and we should all know about Juneteenth. Again, like, it goes back to the education piece. We need to know that this is a thing. We have to come to terms with our history, and we have to think about how we go forward from here, understanding where we have been as a people. Lucretia Burtz is the co-founder and co-chair of the Black Remembrance Project. Lucretia, thanks for all of your hard work. Congrats on getting Juneteenth recognized as a Chicago holiday. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much.
And talk about the corruption and political inaction in Chicago. Well, the Chicago Justice Project did some analyzing of Chicago City Council activities, specifically the Committee on Public Safety. They took a look at 20 years of agenda items from this committee, and their conclusion is that this committee could do a lot more. Tracy Siska is the executive director of the Chicago Justice Project. Check them out online, chicagojustice.org. Tracy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate you giving me some time to talk about our study.
Yeah, you bet. So this, like I said, a 20-year study, and you can access it at chicagojustice.org. And, you know, I think a good place to start here is, what does this Committee on Public Safety do, or what is it supposed to do, at least?
Sure. So as a committee of the City Council, they have a specific purview of oversight, and that is the police accountability system. That is the Chicago Police Department, the 911 system. They have regulatory oversight of all those bodies, and they're empowered to use that oversight to make those agencies perform better. That's their legal obligation.
And I said that at the outset here, when I was introducing you, that this Committee on Public Safety, your study says that they could do a lot more. I guess the negative of that would be that they haven't done that much. So I don't know, however you want to look at it in that sense. But you looked at 20 years of meeting agendas from this committee. Broadly here, what are the big takeaways when we think about this Committee on Public Safety, which is a really important committee in the City Council?
Yeah, theoretically, the most important, because they oversee the police department that is by far the single largest public body in the city, with a 1.7 up to 2 billion, I think, during the beginning of our 20-year period budget. And they don't do anything. That's when it's almost all theater. You know, 20% of the agenda items were literally for donating equipment, used equipment from the police and fire department to cities around the world, mostly in Central and South America, which is a great thing. But that's mostly what they have done, and it's mostly theater. It is mostly validating things that the mayor wants, but really have nothing to do with using or living up to their oversight responsibilities. Even the few times they have in the study, they were items that were brought to the City Council by activist groups. I was involved in two of the three, and my colleagues were involved in all three of them. Other than that, it's mostly a theater, rubber stamping stuff, or talking about like curfew. And it's not that that's not important, but you know, in the 20 years time period, they've the city has spent well over $1 billion of civil judgments and payouts around brutality. And what our study has shown is the city council, this committee, has done almost nothing to regulate police behavior or the police accountability system during that entire time period.
You know, just hearing you talk there, I'm reminded, I've talked to people over the years and they say to me, wow, boy, why is the mayor so strong? Or why is the mayor, the executive, so powerful? And well, here you go, right? I mean, if this committee is going to do the bidding of whoever the mayor is, or just kind of spend their time maybe focused on other things besides this oversight, there you go. You get your answer, you know, about why our political structure is what it is here in Chicago. And, you know, we're talking about oversight here, Tracy. And I want to put this to you. You've probably seen this in the Sun Times. This got coverage in the Sun Times. The current chair of the committee, Chris Taliaferro of the 29th Ward, said that the committee is not about oversight, but instead it's supposed to be a legislative body. How do you respond to that?
Well, that is splitting words, and that's propaganda and a political opportunist. He's trying to split the words so he confuses the audience. What he's trying to spin there is he's like, well, we're not an oversight agency like the Citizen Office of Police Accountability or the Police Board or Deputy Public Safety Inspector General. And in that instance, he's correct. But what he's trying to say is, like, we do legislation, not oversight. No, Alderman. Your legislative powers set the agenda and the structure for that oversight. If you don't want them, let's say in Minneapolis, using a knee on someone's neck for 9 minutes, you make it a crime. In New York, you don't want them using chokeholds. Don't make it a policy, policing policy, where if they break it, then you have to go through this big system to fire them. Make it illegal, Alderman. You can do that, and thus they won't do it.
It's quite literally their job, right, to make law.
Right, right. And if you look in Chicago, there's an ordinance now after the Anjanette Young raid and all the coverage of wrong raids by Dave Savini and Channel 2. What some progressive aldermen have proposed is limiting when they can do raids into people's homes and for what reason, and putting special obligations in place under the law that allows them to do no-knock warrants, but only in really, really urgent matters. And that's not saying, you know, well, you can only go in this door and that door and the one. It's like, no, these are the constraints under which the people of Chicago want your department to do warrants. And there's nothing wrong with that, but he himself and the mayor are like, no, we don't want to get involved in policing. We want everything to be pushed to the police accountability system. Here's the reason why that they're not saying. They don't want to be held politically accountable when the police department or the police accountability system fail and don't do their job. They don't want the political responsibility. It is time this mayor and the Alderman Taliaferro and all, in fact, the entire public safety committee, because they've done nothing over 20 years, it's time they step up and live up to their obligations and do what the people of Chicago want, which is limit the use of force, limit the scope and power of the department. They don't want to do that because they don't want political liability if it goes wrong. And this is total just political opportunism and spinning by these people instead of talking about the truth and what the people of Chicago want.
Yeah, I was going to ask you in terms of some things that this committee could do pretty quickly or fairly quickly, relatively quickly. And you mentioned the no-knock warrant issue. What's another thing that this committee could do that this committee has the power to do right off the bat?
They could pass the Anjanette Young ordinance. They could pass our police settlement transparency and accountability ordinance, which regulates that this committee must hold monthly meetings on police, on settlements related to policing and the police accountability settlements and judgments. We only pay out anywhere from $40 to $120 million a year. God forbid we have some transparency related to that. They could do those things immediately. You could put ordinances in regulating use of force. When can you do certain types of use of force? Those things can be done, but this is a city council committee. This is a city council. And really, honestly, this is a mayor that has no desire to do that. Despite the rhetoric, despite her activity in the police accountability task force and her supposed record on the police board, and while she was head of the Office of Professional Standards almost 2 decades ago now, that is not what her political agenda is. It's about letting the police do whatever they seem to think they need to do.
So they definitely have things they could do. It's not like they're looking for, you know, issues to keep them busy. I'm wondering, have you seen in your study, are there any trends? In other words, have the folks on this committee over the last 20 years, have things gotten worse? Have they stayed about the same in terms of inaction and not doing anything? Have there been any trends that you could see over the 20-year period?
Yeah, if you look term-wise, chairman of the committee term, 4 years typically. The most active one was Chairman Beavers. I think it's from 99 to 2003, if I got that time right. He was the most active during that time, and it's trended downward since that time. The funny part is he was one of two aldermen that later go to federal prison. So,
of course,
you know, and two of the five or six, I forgot what the number is, five or six chairmen that have been head of this committee have done time in federal prison, which is Carruthers. But typically this has trended downward. And even if you look at what we call real oversight, most of that was brought to the committee or brought to the mayor's office, is negotiated with the mayor's office, and the aldermen have no role. When we put in the police reforms for the Chicago Police Board, originally under Daley, and then he canned it, and then it went under Rahm, and Rahm's office passed it, we were sitting in a meeting in the Corporation Counsel's office, and someone from the Intergovernmental Affairs Office, and then at that point, Felicia Davis, chairman of the deputy chief of staff for public safety for Rahm, we negotiated the final language. They said, okay, it'll pass police and fire, which is what the committee was called then, on Wednesday, and the following week it'll pass the city council. And they're like, congratulations, you got your reform. And I turned around, I said, hey, there's no alderman in the room, but it passed the city council. And they laughed and said, that's how it's done. Now, one of my colleagues, it's unfortunately since recently passed away, Harold Winston, great guy, great man, just, you know, said to them, shall we go talk to the chairman of the committee, who was Balser at the time, and talk to him about this? And they said, don't worry, we'll inform them. And then, okay, and then the next week we go to testify at the committee hearing at the big city council chambers, and the aldermen are staring daggers at us like, what are you doing? We've already been told this has to pass. Like, why are you testifying, right? So I'm the last one to testify. So by the time I start walking out from my seat to get back from the part of the chambers where the city council sit and the part of the chambers where the, you know, the public views it, I didn't even get halfway to my seat before they passed it. I was the last one to testify. It was all theater. Part of what's not documented in open data is that even the things that were where they're actually doing some accountability work, in reality, it is all theater. It's done in the mayor's office.
Well, hey, democracy in action, right? Oh, geez. Well, it's
wow.
Yeah. Look, this is something we should know about, because this is how we're doing it here in Chicago. And everyone can check out ChicagoJustice.org to see the report. Again, taking a look at the past 20 years about the agenda items of the Committee on Public Safety. It's important that we know how this stuff works. Tracy Siska is the executive director of the Chicago Justice Project, shining a light on how things are done here in Chicago, important justice issues. Tracy, this is a really interesting report. I really appreciate all your hard work, and thanks for talking to us today, as always.
Thank you so much for having us on. I really appreciate it.
Occasionally, in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. The strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter the self-quarantine version of
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Every time you see me, you hold your head up high. When you're alone,
Oh, yes. Connecting across town to the apartment, the lair of an apartment of Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave, dialing into the Ukrainian village. And this week, Steve, the profile is of a band. I love this name. Skanking Lizard. Some good times music, though. Skanking Lizard, some reggae vibes.
Yeah, you know, and there's not a ton of reggae in Chicago, sadly. But, you know, one of the things I do love about this city, you know, sort of my little lead off here is we got every kind of music here, you know. And they were a really popular band, actually, in their day. So, yeah, Chicago has it all.
Yeah, it sure does. And, you know, it's interesting you say that there isn't a huge reggae scene, and maybe that's true, but you know, there are venues here, and I remember especially like in the 90s and the 2000s, I mean, there were some big venues for reggae in scattered areas of the city.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, I mean, as these guys mentioned, or Al, who I spoke to, the weed fellow in the band, Alan Blood Leary. Cubby Bear, they played a lot. They had a fair amount of reggae shows. But yeah, Kings and Minds used to have a fair amount of reggae shows. It does seem like they are mostly north side, but maybe I'm just out of the loop.
Yeah, so to speak. Ah, I see what you did outside. I like it. I like it. It's all tying together. Synergy, we call that here. All right, so Skanking Lizard, these are a bunch of north side white dudes.
Exactly. And, you know, and they're aware. They know they encountered a bit of flack for that in the day. I mean, even he told a kind of hilarious story when they sort of submitted their demo to a club owner, and they used to hit the club after their softball games in their uniforms. They said he was really shocked when he was like, whoa, these boys do reggae, you know, like what the hell, you know. But they won over. They opened for some of the absolute most heavy legends of the genre and won over audiences and continued to open for bands, you know, and even recorded in Jamaica and stuff. So I will brand them the real deal.
All right, they're the real deal. So Skanking Lizard, like I said, they are originally from the north side of Chicago and high school buddies, and they're coming up in the late 1970s, and their first gig really is at the Cubby Bear right across the street from Wrigley Field.
Yeah, they didn't even have a name yet, you know. I mean, I guess they literally, all the guys took a trip to Jamaica, totally fell in love with the music, decided they're going to come back and start this band, and they didn't even have a name. I mean, I think that, yeah, 1978 was probably a pretty, you know, interesting time for reggae. I mean, you know, it was popular. You had mainstream artists like Bob Marley, who were still in the consciousness of everyone, you know, even if he maybe wasn't necessarily having hits anymore per se. But yeah, it seems like an interest, but they didn't have a name. They supposedly played the Cubby Bear just as Reggae Man tonight, and the place was packed and went bananas. And I think they realized, you know, that there was a place for them.
They say, they claim that they were the first band ever to play at the Cubby Bear.
We could not substantiate this, but yeah, I mean, could very well be. I mean, I tell people that I saw like Hawkwind and Gong at the Cubby Bear, and they go, what? You know, yeah. I think it's turned over. And then actually Ono, who I covered for the strip way, way back, they played there in the 80s, and they're like a confrontational experimental band, and they were banned from ever playing. So,
right. It's interesting. Yeah. I've seen some crazy shows at the Cubby Bear, and you'd think like, oh, this place would be a haven for that kind of music, but all kinds, as you say, it's very diverse, a very diverse scene here. So they play the Cubby Bear. That's their first gig. They are pretty much, Skanking Lizard, pretty much acknowledged as Chicago's first live reggae band. And so tell us what happens after, you know, that this going into the 1980s. But then they, like you say, they start to play festivals, and they're opening up for some crazy big bands.
I mean, they're toured and played dates with Toots and the Maytals, Mighty Diamonds, Steel Pulse, So that's like pretty much the top tier of reggae genre. But yeah, I think they were diverse. I mean, they played with Coco Taylor, the Neville Brothers, Gil Scott-Heron, and even the B-52s, which is, I think it was pretty early for them, like maybe 1980 or something, gig with B-52s and the Lord, you know, supposedly, I guess it must have been Fred Schneider. He says the singer guitarist turned to them at one point and were like, whoa, you know, they didn't throw stuff at you. Every night we play, the opening band gets such a hard time, but they love you guys. Like, you're all right by us. So they're pretty much, you know, seems like they kind of had universal acceptance. And yeah, played some huge, even I mentioned them to like a friend of mine who she's about 10 years older than me and going to shows even longer than me. And she's like, oh man, those guys played every, as soon as I mentioned the name, she was like, oh, they played like every street festival and every big show there in the 80s. So they really had a high, the sad thing is they didn't record all that much.
If you want her only, where is she? Tell me where. And she says,
yeah, I wanted to ask you about that in terms of what they're putting out there. We're hearing some music from them today, but like you say, not a ton to choose from.
Well, sadly, they put out like 1 7-inch in 1983, and then Alan, Mr. Leary, he put out a 12-inch called Kingston Meets Chicago, which is a cool, interesting artifact if you're a Chicago music nerd like myself. I mean, but sadly, they just did these two things, but this has been rectified as there is going to be a new release.
Yeah, so that brings us, I guess, to today, and as we're talking about the band Skanking Lizard from Chicago, what happened to them? What is going on with their music right now?
Well, you know, they effectively broke up in like 1996, I believe. But Jump Up Records, local label, who has been putting out ska and reggae for 30, 40 years, run by a kindly fellow, Chuck Wren, who I used to work in a warehouse with once upon a time, surprisingly enough. Scott King of Chicago, as I like to call him. He is putting out a archival release of unreleased studio stuff, live stuff, and it was sort of time to come out with Record Store Day this previous weekend. It's out there. You can get it. It's called Original Chicago Reggae, 1978 to 1996. And I'd say any Chicago music fan should probably get out there and get that.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. So
there's my sales pitch.
There it is.
There is. I'm not even getting paid for this, and I'm telling you, okay?
If you're into reggae, it's called Original Chicago Reggae, 1978 to 1996. And so Skanking Lizard, they're really no more. But was the last gig where the first gig was?
In an amazing case of closure, which, you know, none of us ever really seem to get in anything in life, to sound cynical, they played their last, another packed gig at the Cubby Bear. So that's a nice little closure. Again, how often do we get that in life? Yeah. But, you know, maybe there'll be enough interest. I always think when one of these sort of archival historical releases come out, sometimes, and there's a good response and reviews and or it sells out or something, bands kind of go, you know, maybe it's time to go all Blues Brothers on this and get the band back together, you know?
maybe, and hijinks will ensue. Well,
go get out of the lounge band, pull them out of there, get them back, doing some reggae.
Get them out of the Holiday Inn Velvet Room. All right. Yeah. Well, the band profiled in this week's Secret History of Chicago Music in the Chicago Reader, Skanking Lizard, some pretty cool local reggae music. You can get the complete story of this band if you go to chicagoreader.com, of course, and look for the Secret History of Chicago Music, or pick up a hard copy of the Chicago Reader. Steve Krakow is the author of the Secret History of Chicago Music Strip, and he also hand-draws the local musician or band that he profiles. Again, chicagoreader.com. Steve, as always, thank you so much, and you keep just feeling those reggae vibes as we cruise into summer.
All I gotta say is, keep on skanking.
My name is Jesse James. I make my living riding fast trains with my six-shooter gun. When I was a young
party.
Yes, the rap party for Outside the Loop show number 766, where Colin and I recap the show a little bit, offer some takeaways.
Yes, Juneteenth. It's a real holiday. It's a holiday that should get a lot of love. And I just want to put this out there, that it is important to celebrate and understand this history so that we can better move forward as a country and as a civilization, frankly, as a species moving forward. But it is also important to take the holiday and do more with it. The right thing to do to take that holiday and be reminded what that holiday is there for and how we can move forward to become a more perfect union. So take the next step. Make sure that, you know, this conversation about reparations is a real thing. And I think it absolutely needs to be had and you should get into it. So that's all I got to say.
Yeah, I mean, just reflect on what the day means and where it comes from and that history, which is uncomfortable. I understand that. But history is not always comfortable, nor is it pretty. It's complicated, you know? And so I think we have to have all that sort of in our minds as we think about this day, which is a really important day. And I think that making it a city holiday, state holiday, now a federal holiday, hopefully will spark more conversations. And yeah, I think the next, I guess, logical step in the thought process here is, you know, the conversation about reparations, which is ongoing. And I know that places like Evanston have, you know, taken action when it comes to reparations. But you know, this is the next level. And again, like, look, this is it's a long process, right? This is not something that just happens overnight. You can't solve these issues that we're going through right now when it comes to race relations in the United States. You're not going to solve that overnight. You're not going to solve that in a week or a year, right? This is something that takes a lot of work. So progress is, it isn't always quick. And sometimes we take these smaller steps. And this is, I think this is actually a big step. So this is, I think it's pretty cool. And it was great to, you know, talk about that with Lucretia and her efforts to make it a holiday, Juneteenth, here in Chicago. And now, boy, this is really, just even since she got started with this in 2019, here we are about 2 years later. And, you know, we've seen this week how it's just sort of all culminated. So my hat's off to Lucretia and everyone who's advocating for things like Juneteenth. How about that Committee on Public Safety? You got to shake your head. You got to laugh a little bit, but oh my goodness. And I'm glad that Tracy Siska and the folks at the Chicago Justice Project, I mean, here you go. Here's the information. Here's the data. This is what was happening, or like we were talking about, maybe not happening over the span of 20 years, but that's how we do it here in Chicago.
Yeah, they're not a they're a legislative body, Mike. That's what they do. They legislate
until they want to oversee something. Then they're an oversight body.
Maybe there's a turnstile when they walk in and they sort of walk in, and depending upon like where it comes out, that's what they'll do today. I don't know.
But hey, we've always got Steve Krakow.
We do. Love Steve Krakow, and he's a treasure.
He is a treasure. So I think when I think about this show, I'm inspired because of folks like Lucretia. Look what happened, right? Here we are, Juneteenth as a holiday. Tracy Siska doing great work with the Chicago Justice Project to shine a spotlight on how government works and to hopefully affect change going forward. And Steve Krakow telling the stories that nobody is telling when it comes to these local bands. So, you know, fairly inspirational, I think. Even though, you know, with the Committee on Public Safety, it could be a little, you know, that's a downer. But inspiring that folks are out there exposing this. So there it is, Colin. Inspirational.
Mike, I think we've done our job.
Oh, got to say this. Happy Father's Day, Colin.
Same to you. What did you ask for? What's on your wish list? Is it the LMTFA? Is that what you're asking for?
What is that?
Leave me the alone?
Yeah. Oh, I would never ask for that, Colin. Never. Never in a million years. Because that's not attainable.
My father-in-law, that's the J-Dubs Father Day special.
Well, I hope he gets that. No, I don't know. I just, it just kind of sneaks up on you Father's Day. And then, I know my wife did get me ahead of time a nice sweatshirt. So that was nice. And we'll see what happens this weekend. But Colin, I want you to just put your feet up. You just relax a little bit.
Mike, you're a great dad. You go be a great dad. Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you as well, Colin. A great dad yourself. That's it. That's the wrap party for Outside the Loop, show number 766. Happy party. And that just about does it. Outside the Loop, show number 766 is all wrapped up just for you. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Colin for producing and Bob Ferguson doing the engineering today. Have a fantastic week. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Happy Father's Day, Dad. And I'll talk to you again next week right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.